Rick Gammon joins us from RickRunGood.com, First Cut Podcast on CBS Sports, all over the place. And he joins us to get us set for the start of the playoffs. Happy playoff season, Rick. How are you, man?
I'm doing well, Chris. Always a pleasure. Yes, this is the sprint to the finish line, the super season, 50 events long. This is the final few, and it starts right here at Liberty National.
You know, it's funny watching the playoff last week and Kevin Kisner winning after he had been snake bitten in a number of playoffs. It struck me as a bit ironic that in golf, with all of this data we have, with all of the ways we talk about trying to use that data to give us a true representation, man, no matter what the format is, no matter how many times they play a weird combination of 18 over and then another hole sprinkled in at some of these courses, there is such a randomness to these playoffs. And it can be something, that randomness, a par here when another guy makes a freak birdie or crazy up and down, it can lead to, you know, legacies, can lead to spots on, you know, international competition teams. Perhaps it was crazy to watch Kevin Kisner finally kind of, you know, reach that, not to be too dramatic, but that playoff coronation, to steal a word from Jim Nance.
Golf is weird. I think it's just such a weird game, and there's so much luck involved. There's so much mental involved. I mean, I keep thinking back to the first playoff hole where only two guys were putting for birdie. Roger Sloan, I had like a 25 footer, and Adam Scott had stuffed it in there close to 4 feet, 11 inches. And
the rest of the shots were just kind of ugly.
They were ugly.
Like aesthetically, yeah.
Yeah. And I keep thinking, you know, he's been a great putter this year. 5 feet, that's almost a gimme for these guys. But as you have a six-way playoff, he is having to wait for every other golfer to basically finish. And he's sitting there for 7, 8, 9 minutes, whatever it ended up being. And I think it was just too much. You saw him pull out
all threw darts too.
Yeah. And you saw him open up the yardage book a couple of times in the greens reading book. And he was just overthinking it, and he missed it. And you only get one crack at it. It's just the margins are so incredibly small.
I'll even take you back the hole before, like, and I guess I have no witness to this, but I said, I guarantee Russell Henley misses his putt. His body language looked so bad.
Mm-hmm. It was he actually the roller coaster of emotions, because he was off the back there on 18 or putting for birdie to win, and he gave it a good run, but he ran it by like 5 feet or whatever. And then, you know, coming back, there's just no chance he's going to make it. And it's devastating, man. It's just absolutely devastating.
Yeah, it's a lonely place. But man, got to give credit to really all those guys in the playoff for making it a lot more interesting playoff than I think we all thought after Adam Scott put his first shot on the first playoff hole in. But alas, Kevin Kisner is your winner. Before we get into the field, let me just ask you, Rick, your kind of take on building, for instance, a team. If you are tasked with building the American team, and I know this is fun to debate, but with all the information that you have at your fingertips, with everything we discuss every week, give me, like you do when we build our DFS lineups, the two or three most important factors for you. Maybe that's too simplistic of a question, but if Rick Gammon had the keys to the car for the Americans and the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. Whistling Straits is a course that will be set up to play into the hands of the Americans, which is kind of this long distance, bomb it through the air type of game. Listen, I don't think any captain is going to do this, but there's a really strong case to be made that the U.S. team should be focusing more on the locker room and not what is going on the course. You know, the European squad has won, what, 7 of the last 9? They've been underdogs in every single one, and they have a formula that everyone pulls in the same direction. So with that being said, the extreme build for the American team is you leave home Brooks, you leave home Bryson, and you leave home Patrick Reed. Now, no captain is going to do that, because if the Americans lose, they are going to look foolish. However, the depth of the American squad, I mean, you could go 20 or 22 deep on the Ryder Cup standings and get get guys that on paper are going to be able to beat the European team. So the idea would be to go all in on the locker room, go all in on everyone kind of checking their ego at the door and all pulling in the same direction. I don't think it'll ever happen, Chris, but that is probably one of the more optimal ways to go, because the European team has given us the blueprint and we have not taken advantage of it.
Yeah, you know, if you left Reed off, you'd have to deal with Justine Reed tweeting you all weekend.
That's right. She's quick to the block. Maybe we just block her in retaliation.
It is crazy to see some of the guys that recently have been on the European team, and you know, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. Like Chris Wood was on the team in 2016. Right. You know, Thorbjørn Olsen and Alex Noren, Andy Sullivan in 2016. Like, not to, you know, knock any of these guys. Steven Gallagher in 2014, Victor Dubosin, like, they're not afraid to just take whoever's playing well. It's almost like they do the blind resume test.
Yeah, it's an incredible dynamic that we have going on here. Not every single golfer is going to play all the sessions. In fact, they're not. I mean, you're going to have one guy who plays basically probably one team session and the individuals, or maybe just the individuals. It's such an interesting way that the Europeans have had a chance to get it done. And they are on paper a dog again this time around, and they've been a dog basically every single year. And you know, they hoist a lot of trophies. So it's something that I think, you know, needs to be at least, you know, dove into a little bit more.
Yeah, they it's just crazy looking at some of the teams. Oliver Wilson, for instance. Are you familiar with what an Oliver Wilson is?
No.
He was on the European team back in 2016. No, I'm sorry, 2008. And he would not, after being on this team, he had played in one major, the U.S. Open, had missed the cut. And after playing on the Ryder Cup team in 2008 for Team Europe, 6 years later, he'd get his first and only European Tour win. Like, how? Wow. That's just crazy.
It's crazy.
But different way to do it, I guess. Let's talk about the playoffs getting started. And, of course, rickrungood.com is where you go to get all of the information, the cheat sheet where you can find the strokes gained data, where you can find the projections for their ownership and DraftKings, the points Rick, his model expects them to put up. When we get to this point, Rick, with as much data as we have, I guess we always say the Masters is the one kind of bulletproof set of data we have year to year. But when we get to this point, headed into the Northern Trust with the strength of field and the amount of information that we have, what does that allow us to do from a build and a preparation standpoint?
Yeah, so unfortunately, this event now rotates between courses. So we're going to Liberty National this year, and that is, we haven't played here since 2019. We did not play here last year. It was TPC Boston in 2020. So that kind of hurts some of the modeling. Also, the good part about the modeling is you generally get the same players, or at least the same caliber of players, right? It's the top 125 players in the FedEx Cup standings. And
which
all
is more
here
important to you, by the way? Like the consistency in the group of the field, or a consistency in course, if you had to pick one?
Ooh, it's still probably course, but it's close. I mean, courses, because they can be so different, the range of outcomes of courses.
And the gap is maybe getting a bit narrower year to year.
Yeah, exactly. So fields, and this is literally the strongest non-major, non-players championship field ever. The only guy who's not here is Louis Oosthuizen. He will not be replaced because you have to qualify for this event. So we're going with 124, and you really, because you had to qualify, generally all these guys are playing well enough. They're trending in the right direction. So there really is no scrub, which means when I start to build lineups, for example, when you scroll all the way down to the bottom of the player pool and you see guys that are 6,100, 6,200, 6,300, there are guys, Erik van Rooyen won like 2 weeks ago and he's near the min price. I mean, it's just kind of funny to see how we perceive these golfers now in a field that is absolutely jam-packed.
So explain to me then, with the caliber of field that we have and compared to major weeks, why then do we not see the same kind of soft pricing that we do for the majors and most recently that we did, I guess, for the U.S. Open, Rick?
Yeah, I don't think this pricing is not soft. Also, the real reason is because major championships bring in a lot of casual fans. So okay. DraftKings yeah. wants to make it very easy.
More play and bigger guarantees.
Yeah, they want you to make lineups that you know who the six players are. That's what they want. Yeah. Now, this is not necessarily a major championship, or it's not a major, so it's not going to bring in a lot of those casuals. But it's interesting because like the $6,000 range is huge, the $7,000 range is huge. And I don't think I've seen, I can't remember off the top of my head, a time where we had seven golfers costing over $10,000. That's very rare. So it's just kind of a different pricing instead of a softer pricing.
Yeah. And then some huge names that the 9,000s really intrigue yes. me, and some of the guys in the mix for what you were mentioning about the Ryder Cup. So let's just go through how we generally start this exercise. Give me all things considered, Rick, and the way that the model is built and the key stats for Liberty with what we know. Give me the area where you begin, and is there that one guy that you have to have that we start our lineup card with this week?
There is a case for every single one of the guys over $10,000. That's why they are there. I think the convergence of Liberty National along with price, along with form and upside is Rory McIlroy. He's $10,000. He has been phenomenal with his irons recently, which is the one thing that when the tour got shut down last summer, he never found the wedge play again. He never found the iron play again until this six event stretch. And this six event stretch has only been replicated by him about two other times in his career. Those other two situations have been just multiple win, constant top five situations. So that's the type of golfer we're seeing for Rory right now. And he's not being priced in that way. So there is a very, very strong case to be made that he is the most valuable player on the slate at an even $10,000.
All right. We're going to win the million this week. So I pop Rory into the $15, $1 million flop shot game on, I guess it's 250K to first. Oh, well.
I don't even want it.
We'll chop that up. So where do we go next? And like you said, there aren't really any scrubs. So does that change the way that we approach? Are we going to an area of the card next, Rick? Or are we going to another guy that we really want to have?
I'm going to stick with another guy that I really want to have. And it's Bryson. He's 9,600. And this is how you win the 250K, because you go get someone that everyone else is overlooking. And he has been much better on approach recently. He has been much better with the putter recently. Putting on bent grass, which is what he's going to get this week, is his best surface that he puts on. I have concerns that the New York faithful are not going to let the Brooksy thing go. And he's going to have to deal with that this week. But otherwise, the game is close. And being able to buy him early, less than $10,000 at almost, you know, a fraction of the ownership of some of these other guys is very appealing.
Yeah, Shane Ryan had a pretty interesting take on that after walking in Memphis. And if he's on our squad, we won't call him Brooksy. We will call him Bryson. So that gives us Rory. That gives us Bryson. Man, I wouldn't even be surprised. I'm not even going to say it, but I am very intrigued with what area of the card we go to next. Four slots open. It gives us the 30,000 foot view, $7,600 on average for each of those four slots. So how do we approach starting to fill out these last four, Rick?
Yes. So I think we have to go cheap. We have to go value, but that's okay because these guys are pretty good. These guys are guys that we play a lot. Hank Lebioda is $6,300. He's very interesting. And what has happened here is he was one of the hottest players on tour for 5 or 6 weeks in a row. He played great at the 3M Open and withdrew on Friday night because of a family emergency. Certainly not going to knock him for that. He then didn't play particularly well at the Wyndham, played okay. It wasn't great, but I mean, that's his first event back in a long time. Usually these guys ease into things and he got a significant price decrease. So one of the hottest golfers over
decrease too, huh?
Exactly. And outside of two rounds that he played at the Wyndham Championship, his last 30 have been awesome. So I'm going to give us a lot of flexibility with Hank Lebioda here at 6,300.
I like that. We've got just over 8K left now. Do we stay and grab another value guy or do we start moving up?
It's a good question. I could kind of go both ways here. I think I prefer the value because there is one other guy that I think is... He's not that low though. So I don't know if you're gonna be able to guess it.
Oh, okay. Well, I was gonna say Taylor Gooch.
That's not bad.
Been fairly good to us in his ball striking, his strokes gain numbers. I like.
I mean, I would not hate Gooch.
Okay, Seamus Power.
Seamus Power. Yeah, that's the guy.
Is that
yeah,
the guy?
Yeah.
Dude, those numbers pop off the page at me.
Yeah, he is outside. Okay, so he was, again, the hottest player on the planet. Wins the Barbasol, then takes like 3 weeks off and doesn't play, comes back at Wyndham, makes the cut. He makes a bunch of birdies, but finishes like 60th. It's fine. Again, first start back after winning. It's hard to refocus for these guys. They have to figure it out. Now he gets to play again, flat $7,000. And again, a mass exodus of ownership. I mean, we are going to plug him into this lineup and we're going to have a lot of money left to spend.
We are, and that means we could give it the old Gaiman Raby special. And sauce in a Hideki.
Yes.
At 9K, we've got an average of 85.5 each. Do you like to go back towards the top and then settle for somebody who is still really solid at the top of the 7,000s? How do you like to approach these last two?
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually the big mistake that people make is they see that they have what, like $8,500 left or whatever.
Split
the difference, or I don't even like to start with the cheaper guy. I think it is, you are better off because the cheaper guys, they're all so close. They're all, you know, the guy that we're going to have to pay $7,000 or $7,500 for, they're all the same. Why wouldn't we split hairs and try to find the guy we like who is more expensive? So Hideki's the guy.
Reed,
yeah. I love Hideki. I love Webb Simpson. Hideki is, you know, missed the cut at the Wyndham. I think it's good. He missed it by one shot. He was phenomenal with his irons coming from Tokyo to Memphis to Sedgefield. Like, take two extra days off. And he has just been lights out, and everyone knows he is a horrible putter, and I'm not going to defend that, but he is basically an average putter on bent grass, which is what he's going to get this week. This to me is the spot to redeploy Hideki in a big way.
Two of the best putts I've ever seen him hit might have been the two missed putts in Memphis in the playoffs. So then we've got 8,100 left, which means we can do a variety of things. We can grab at the top of that list is Neiman, Burns, Kisner. We can start working our way down a little bit further. Jason Kokrak has played well, has been good to us. Even further down than that, let's see. Sergio, I know we've talked about his ball striking numbers, the aforementioned Henley. What kind of guy do we like here, Rick, and who sticks out maybe amongst this pack?
Yeah, so this is why I like that we spent on Hideki and we spent up, because to me, all of these guys are generally the same. You know, you have Joaquin Neiman, Sam Burns, Kevin Kisner, Matt Fitzpatrick. They do it in different ways, but they're all going to come in right between 5 and 10% ownership. They're all going to have a similar upside. They're all going to have a similar floor. So that's why I like actually spending and taking a stand on someone. And then we can almost, I don't want to say throw a dart here, Chris, but
no, I
mean, I don't care. I'd go to anyone from Sergio to Joaquin Neiman. I mean, take your pick. I don't have a strong take on any of them, and I think that's kind of the point.
If we want to take a stand, how do you feel about either Sergio or Poulter?
Yeah.
Or Sungjae, Matt Fitzpatrick's ownership is going to be fairly low. Tell me. If they're all kind of the same, then – do we just pick a guy, or is there anything then that you defer to in terms of, all right, all of the things equal, here's the one number maybe that I'll lean on, here's the blind resume, so to speak, that I'll lean on, and I'll let the numbers do the work?
Yeah, you said Matt Fitzpatrick, who I think is kind of really interesting because we've seen him win in Europe, hasn't really been able to do that over here, but this is, I think people don't realize how good he is off the tee and how consistent he is, which gives you a really good leg up at Liberty National. And I just imagine that because kind of the schedule that he played was weird, right? It was Open Championship, it was Memphis, and then we didn't really see him. And I think that he just flies in here under the radar. I would not mind Fitzpatrick one single bit.
I like it. That would give us Rory, Bryson, Hank Lebioda, Hideki, Seamus Power, and Matt Fitzpatrick. I have one of my best friends is named Matt Fitzpatrick, so I always call him Matt Fitzpatrick and not Matthew Fitzpatrick. I will submit that, Rick Gaiman, and we will have bags. We will be carrying bags out of Liberty National on Sunday. Go to rickrungood.com and can't recommend enough, especially for an event like this, the Showdown Cheat Sheets, the First Cut podcast, where you guys are giving out some live guys all weekend and excited for the first leg of the playoffs. Thank you, sir. We'll be plugged into rickrungood.com all weekend, and We'll talk to you next week as we're counting our money on an island somewhere.
Boom. Thanks, Chris.